My name is Shane. I'm an alcoholic. That was quick. Let's see. So, is anybody here new? Do we have any, like, anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety?
No.
Hey, CJ.
Welcome, brother.
Welcome.
The reason I say that is every time that I've gotten sober, for whatever reason, my first 30 days is a pretty good depiction of emotional instability for me, you know, and sometimes it carries on a lot longer. So let me just give you, like, so I've been trying to get sober since I was 17. That's when I actually got a desire to want to be sober. You know, I wanted to do something. I don't know how necessarily willing I was to do whatever I needed to do, but I wanted sobriety. I really did, and I meant it with everything in me, especially while I was in my treatment centers. I really wanted it then, you know. But there's something. So my first treatment center, let's just put it this way, I was 17 years old, and, you know, I had to be medically separated from all the substances that I was putting in my body, and I went into there, and to say the least, it was like the roughest, in terms of emotion, since the topic tonight is emotional sobriety. It was like one of the, I had never experienced being forced to be separated from alcohol and everything else, you know. I'd never been in that position until then, you know. And after, like, you know, all the detox symptoms are away and everything, and I was just, it was just me, you know. And I had never experienced that before. And I was absolutely insane. I don't know how else to put it. I know you probably hear this all the time, but I was 17 years old, and the only, because this place was a little bit less, you know, there wasn't as much restrictions. It was definitely, you know, separated from everything. But in my mind, I was like, I will find a way to find comfort and ease in whatever drugs or whatever we could. I was thinking about making hooch. I had heard somebody talking about that from jail, you know, and everything. And I was like, you know, at one point I even put I had heard this and I think it's full crap, but you carve out like an orange and you put toothpaste in it and then you let it rot. And this would give me some kind of hallucinogenic effect. And I don't even like hallucinogens, but I was like, whatever I need to do. And let me tell you, I found a way while I was in there to, you know, get loaded many, many times and eventually, of course, getting kicked out. But I was that guy that ran every single day. I promised them when I first got there, I'm going to run. I'm going to run about 180 miles up to Phoenix, where I live. You know, that I was just in a state of mind of just seeking anything. I just had to get away from where, like, the position I was in. And unfortunately, that position, I'm always there. I'm always in that position no matter what, because it's me, you know. So I was finding anything, and of course I got kicked out of there. And then I go to another place, and I swear to God, I cried for the first month and a half. Partly because I knew I couldn't get loaded in there. Other half, just, you know, all the emotions of everything. I was just a basket case. I was bawling my eyes out all the time. And everybody in that place, in this new place, which was locked down, would just stare at me like, what is wrong with this guy, right? And you know, because I was just so emotional, and I would attach it to anything. I'd be like, oh, it's because I miss my family, or, you know, oh, I need to just go home and be with them. I swear to God, I would never do what I was doing again, right? And I was just absolutely insane. And, you know, that got a little bit better, just being absent, and I guess, but, like, really all I did was confine to the rules of the place, right? That's all I really did, you know what I mean? I just kind of, like, I gave in, you know, enough to where I would follow all the rules. I actually became like an upstanding member of this treatment center while I was 17 and stayed there a month or two after my 18th birthday because I thought that was the right thing to do and everything. The crazy thing is it's an all guys place, of course, and we all wear the same uniform and we all shaved our heads and everything. I was so concerned with what people thought of me. I was absolutely concerned of my image and everything, and this caused a lot of, like, upsets inside of me. I was just constantly racking my brain about how I was appearing to everybody, you know, and it was just a constant effort to try to appeal to everybody around me, you know. And in that state of mind, that's an impossibility, really, you know. It's an impossibility to appeal to everybody, and especially in a place like that, you know. So, and I remember being in there, and I would be laying in my bed, And I would just be like, why can't I stop thinking about shit? Like that was like the only thing I at the time could identify anything with was I just thought I was pondering all the time about the things that I had no control over or whatever it was, getting out, being there, the people in there, what they thought of me, what they didn't think of me. I was just always in a state of just like thinking about life, not doing anything about it. And I did this other times as well. This was just when it became apparent to me to some degree, right? And you know, what happened is I got out of there. You know, eventually you leave treatment center, and a funny thing happens. Like, I wanted to stay sober at that point. You know, I really did. I was driving home. It was an 8-hour drive back to my parents' house. And I remember just sitting there and being like, I want this more than anything. And I was 18 years old, and I meant it with every fiber of my body. I really did. You know, but kind of when it comes to emotional sobriety, I kind of relate it to the spiritual malady. If you guys haven't heard of this, you know, you always hear other people talk about, even normal people talk about, the hole inside of you, whatever you need to fill up, you know. When I was thinking about this topic, that's what I was thinking of, you know. It was the spiritual malady of everything, because I have some kind of substance in me, and I'm whole. I'm not the one who took the brunt of my alcoholism. I'm not the one who took it. It was everybody around me who didn't have drugs and alcohol. They're the ones who took the most brunt, because I had something. You know what I mean? Even though it was destroying my life and I was falling apart, I had something to turn to. They didn't. They had to just suffer through it, you know? But I was separated from that. I was free of my treatment center. And I was told, you know, you need to go out. You need to get a job. You need to go to college. You need to save money. And hopefully get a car when I could, because it was still suspended for a little bit longer. You know, all these things. And I made these things happen. I got a girlfriend at that time as well. I made all these things happen in my life, to some degree made them happen. You know? And there's something about alcoholism and then coupled with this spiritual malady where I have like a chronic discontentment. No matter what I have, no matter if I get what I want, there's always going to be followed up with something I want more. And if I get $50, I'm going to want $100. And then if I get a girlfriend, God, I mean, if they don't work, then it's just a shit show of problems, if you guys know what I mean. You know, and it's just, it's never, so in that case, it would be like I would get her, and then I see all her flaws, and I focus in on them. But I can't leave her because, you know, so there's just all these emotions going on, and I'm just like torn apart about everything, and I'm in college, so I'm like, I'm successful, you know, but I don't feel it inside. I just feel like I'm dying inside. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm holding my breath, trying to get some kind of life out of material things, you know, try to get that breath of fresh air out of material things. But I think subconsciously I was comparing these things to what alcohol did for me. And if you guys are like me, any job, any amount of money, anything like that is not going to suffice to what alcohol did for me. It won't, and it won't ever. You know what I mean? And I think subconsciously I was just like in a state of comparing. I don't know if I ever did this consciously, like I said, but it was something that just kind of happened. I was just comparing it to it, and nothing ever sufficed. So I was in a chronic state of discontentment and unease, you know? And so, I mean, of course, as the story is told, I end up getting drunk again. And I do this for, God, another like year and a half, 2 years, until I come up to Prescott and I try to get sober again, right? I get separated from, I go through the medical detox of everything, and the same thing happens. I feel like I gotta make up for lost time or something. I don't know what it is. I feel like I'm like in a frantic rush once I'm all like physically cleared up, that I gotta get things done now. Cause look, I'm sober. I'm 3 weeks sober. I need to make things happen in my life. I've wasted a lot of time. And trust me, if you're like me, you probably did waste a ton of time, you know, doing absolutely nothing. And so whatever it was, I felt justified in trying to make my life work. You know, and that's what I had always been taught. You always grow up hearing like, oh, go out to, you know, get good grades in school so you can get into college and then get good grades there. And these are all wonderful things. And then, you know, get a career out of it and then find a wife and get a family and then have a house and have kids and just this beautiful thing. And that's what I was always growing up with. And these things are wonderful. But at the end of the day, if you're like me, if you have that feeling inside, none of that's ever going to make me happy. And it hasn't. I mean, I haven't been married or anything, but you get the point. I've had a lot of things in my life, you know, materially and not, you know, and it's never sufficed. And that's what happened again, this time coming up here to Prescott, you know, change of location, all these things. And I was in a state of unrest, you know, I was just restless. I was just waiting for the next thing to bring me up. And I found him. I tried to find him, you know, and I was very, I don't know, it was just a... it's like a dark time of my life. Just, and I was sober. I was as sober as I am now, you know, 3 months sober. That's pretty sober. I don't know. You know, and I was just in like a state of malcontent. I could not find what I was looking for, you know, and nor was I really willing, because people kept putting up the idea of the 12 steps, and I was going to like 180 meetings in this time of this, you know, 100 and some days sober. I went to like probably at least 160 meetings or something, you know, and I'm in a halfway house, and that's all you really got to do, you know, go socialize and find the places with the cutest women, and like that's all I did all day, and I was still unrest. So meetings, obviously, at least in my case, did absolutely nothing in terms of that. You know, just being there at least. You know, the fellowship was cool and everything, and to drink coffee with people, but it wasn't enough for that. You know what I mean? I gotta have something that suffices, something that's just as equal to alcohol or more. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, of course, as like the pattern in my life, I end up getting loaded again. That's what I do, you know? Because and at that time, I had a job, I had saved a little bit of money, and in my alcoholism, I don't ever have money. I'm a scrounger, I just kind of pick off the ground and get what I can. You know what I mean? That's just the life that I lived. And so I had a little bit of money, you'd think that would kind of put me at ease with who I was and have some kind of sense of self, you know what I mean? But it didn't. And I was involved with somebody at the time, though it was very sick, and it was a very unhealthy thing, and I was very emotionally distraught and obsessive and crazy, you know. All these things, and my emotions are everywhere. And then, so I get loaded again. I know I don't want to be running too long, but I get loaded again. And for whatever reason, I don't know what exactly happened in that moment, but through that experience of getting loaded again, And saying literally 20 minutes before to some other person I was talking to that night, I had told her, I was like, she was out, you know, drinking again, and I was like, I can't do that. I'm not capable of it, and I won't. That's how I felt about it. And I was out, I had gotten kicked out of my halfway house because I was still stealing things and all kinds of shit, you know. And I told her this, and then 20 minutes later, I'm loaded again. You know what I mean? And that was, for whatever reason, that experience was very powerful, and I begged my house manager to come back in, and for the first time in my life, I was like, I will give you my phone that I just paid for. I will give you all the money in my pocket. I will give you anything that you want if you'll let me back in. And sure, you know, sure enough, they let me back in, thank God, you know, and God bless them for letting me back in, considering the track record I had with this place. And they let me back in, and I was in a state of willingness to do whatever I needed to do. And thank God, there's somebody in my life at that time. I had a sponsor, you know, bare minimum, at least I had a sponsor. I mean, he wasn't really sponsoring me, but I had one, right? At least I could claim that. And I don't know what step I was on in those 3 months. It was irrelevant to me. I had what I had priorities elsewhere, you know, and he was in my life, and he's like, are you ready to sit down? And so we started going through the steps, and we go through them, and somewhere in that process, I felt a state of enlightenment. I don't know, for me it was around the fifth step, and that's just what happened. A sense of, I can breathe again. You know what I mean? Cause I just described these other times getting sober where I'm just like, on edge, just waiting for something. Give me something, and then I would get a little bit of something, and then a little bit more, you know, it's just constantly like that. You know? And though I don't know if I would have identified it at the time, there may have been somebody who'd point this right out to me, and I was in such a state of ego and defense that I would have been like, nope, that's not me, right off the bat, because that's how deep I was into it. Anyway, so I go through the steps, and I have this experience with it, where for the first time in my life, I lay down on my pillow, and I'm a whole person. Like an entire person, flaws in everything. It was everything. I was fine exactly the way that I was. And I didn't feel like I needed to impress people and all these things. And it was wonderful, and it was very freeing, you know? And it's funny because they presented this topic to me, because that was wonderful and everything, but these things don't necessarily last. You gotta put in a lot more work. And thank God I did, you know, and have continued since that day. But, that doesn't necessarily mean that my sobriety is some of the, if anybody in this room knows me on a personal level, like, when they told me I was going to be speaking on emotional sobriety, I was like, so emotional stability, you got the wrong guy. This is not the guy you're looking for, because anybody who knows me, I go through ups and downs. It's the way it is. That's life. You know, that's the way that things are. I'm not always happy. I'm not always, this weekend, God bless, I mean, I've actually been in a pretty content mood all weekend, you know, so you guys caught me on a good one. But, you know, sometimes it isn't like that, you know? And I'm not always beaming with joy, talking with people free and just happy and full inside. I'm not always like that. You know, so my sobriety has had a lot of ups and downs. But the point that I want to make is thank God I had something to turn to this entire time. And if there's one thing that I want anybody to take out of, you know, me sharing anything tonight, is that throughout, you know, after this experience that I had at the fifth step and everything, and I jumped into making amends and started doing a 10 and 11 to what I even knew what they were, but I was doing the best that I could and carrying the message to guys in my halfway house just, you know, with what I could. And I got in a lot of practices in there, and there would be nights where I didn't want to do an 11th step, but I'd do it anyways. And then when I started sponsoring guys, there's times where I don't want to spend 3.5 hours doing a fifth step, but I do it anyways. You know, and for whatever reason, and that's not always like that. Sometimes I like doing it, but you know, there's sometimes like 50-50, it's a toss-up. I don't always want to do everything, you know? And if I base what I do on how I feel, I'm going to stop doing everything, guaranteed. So that is like the biggest thing that I could bring tonight when it comes to emotional sobriety, is that I can't base my sobriety necessarily on how I'm feeling. Somebody once told me, and it offended me at the time, but they're like, the most selfish person is the one who cares more about his feelings than anybody else. Because, oh, I don't feel good, I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to give you, you know, all these things. It will literally determine what I do for other people, you know, and how much work I'm willing to put in. And that for me leads me to a state of unrest and unease, and I'm unhappy again, you know. So there's been times in my sobriety, longer than others, where, you know, I was not necessarily whole inside. I was doing an 11th step. I was telling my, you know, I was doing a 10th step, you know, and following the four things that they ask you to do in the 10th step. And I was doing these things, and I even had sponsees at the time, you know, a couple months sober, and I was not necessarily felt like, you know, what I described with my fifth step, whole person. But every single night I just kept doing it, you know. And I got in these practices, and then I get out of the halfway house and I do it outside of there regardless of whether I feel like doing it or not. And I keep doing it, and to this day I've still maintained that, you know, regardless of how I feel, you know. And thank God, like I said, like I actually wanted to come and speak tonight. It sounded really wonderful, but it's not always like that, you know. But I guarantee, I hope I could guarantee that I would still be here even if I didn't want to be here. You know what I mean? So that's like the biggest thing I could bring tonight is that's what determines my sobriety, you know, not necessarily that I'm always fucking happy and I'm always just on the air, you know, just floating in the sky, you know, looking at all these infidels below me, right? I'm just another person, and I go through ups and downs, and that's just the way it is, you know. And thank God I have actually come to a little bit better terms with that. I'm not saying that my emotions don't determine how willing I am, but, you know, that has made a huge difference in my sobriety. You know, and I mean, thank God for the good times and thank God for the bad, because the bad times have played just a big enough part. You know what I mean? They have played a huge part in my sobriety. You know, those times where I stayed in the practices, and you know what? All the mistakes that I've made since I've been sober. Wonderful. Wonderful. I hate them in the time because they hurt and they make me feel bad, but they've all played their part because I never stopped moving my feet. It's the only reason I think I'm here. If you find a common denominator in the people who stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, it seems like the people who just keep moving their feet, which is a hard thing for a self-centered guy like me who bases everything I do on how I'm feeling, right? So that I mean, I don't really know what else to say. So that's it.
Thank you. My name is Lisha. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisha.
Hello. My sobriety date is September 6th of 2004, and this is the first time I get to say this. I am visiting from Austin, Texas. So this is awesome. I grew up in Chicago and then got sober in Tucson, Arizona. What's up? It's my turn. My recovery was hard, you know. I came in at 20, got a sponsor, got involved in service, you know, went to meetings, 90-90, got a boyfriend, did the gamut, you know. And I worked the steps. You know, I worked the steps to the best of my ability. I gave it the college try, you know. But a lot of things didn't change for me. You know, my anger didn't go away right away, you know. And I was a rage queen. And I was verbally abusive. And what happened was people started approaching me and saying things to me like, Alicia, your behavior is disgusting. Alicia, I don't want what you have. You know, like, Alicia, if you don't change your behavior, you're going to drink. And I was very fortunate that they said it in that tone, in that way. You know, had they mamby-pambied me or, you know, oh, you know, Alicia, sometimes you're really mean. I would have been like, I know. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't care. But people coming up to me and saying things to me like, you know, you're gross. You know, this, what you got going on here, I don't want. And so I, it forced me to really do some internal deep work. And, you know, today I don't rage. You know, I curse like a sailor, but that's just like, that's just me, you know? Like I have tried on numerous occasions to quit swearing and it like fucks up my prayer and meditation, you know? It's like God and I talk dirty, you know? Like that's the reality of the situation. And that if that offends you, like I'm okay enough to say that's your problem, not mine. You know, like I don't have to take that on for you. But I curse, you know, and it's just a part of who I am. And you know, but I'm not verbally abusive anymore. You know, I don't rage anymore. I'm as honest as I'm able to be, you know, today. And my emotional sobriety is very much contingent on my spiritual fitness, you know? So what is going on with me? You know, for me, my emotional sobriety, what that means for me today is that I trust in a higher power. I trust in Alcoholics Anonymous. I trust in the 12 steps. I trust in the service. I trust in the recovery. I trust in the unity. But I need it all in order to make me whole. And when things start to drop from my program, you know, when I start to isolate or I don't need to do that inventory today, or you know what, I had a really long day at work and I'm tired, I don't want to go to a meeting, like that's the stuff that affects my emotional sobriety. And really, like, what emotional sobriety means for me is when I'm spiritually fit, I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about me. I'm worried about what's going on with me. But when I'm not, you know, connected, like, I'm judging, you know, like, what? Oh, he did what? You know, she did what? And I care about your program, and I put my nose in your business, and I find fault in other people, and I can make excuses for my behavior, you know, but you are the problem, you know, like I would be okay if only you would, you know, like that's my emotional sobriety. My emotional sobriety is contingent on me looking at me and not worrying about you, you know, you are not my business. I am my business. And what that means also for me when I'm spiritually fit, and this is going to come out awkward, so let me say it and then clean it up. is like, I don't want what you have today. I want what I have. You know, I want my sobriety. Because my sobriety is kick ass. You know, I have two definitions of humility and they both really work for me, and you know, feel free to take them. One of them is the ability to remain teachable. You know, that who I am today is just a byproduct of where I am today. Tomorrow I may reach a new point of spiritual awakening. You know, in 3 months from now I may reach a new point of spiritual awakening, that a behavior that worked yesterday or 3 months ago doesn't work today. You know, that ability to be okay. That ability to like look at you and go, oh wow, you're human. You know, oh wow, like you are another member of Alcoholics Anonymous that I need to love. You know, that like, I was told when I came in that it wasn't that I had a self-esteem issue, you know, like they didn't tell me we're gonna love you until you can love yourself. Like they said to me, Alicia, loving yourself is your fucking problem, you know? Like, you, we're going to love you until you can love somebody else. You know, so when I'm, so I can be in that humility of letting you be you and having that teachable moment, that, that ability to just see you for where you are, giving you the autonomy to be you. And the other part is having a clear identity of who and what I am, you know, strengths and weaknesses. Like, yeah, I'm an asshole, you know, like a lot of the time I'm assertive, I'm direct, I'm brash, that cuts people the wrong way a lot of the time. Like, I always am like, when people ask me to sponsor them, I'm like, are you sure? Like, like, this isn't going to be a gentle ride for you, you know? But that's the way that I was brought up, you know? I wasn't handled with kid gloves. I was handled with, you're going to fucking die, and I care more about your life than I do about your feelings. And so, you know, but I have an understanding that my personality rubs people the wrong way, that people can take offense to who I am. Do I have to take that on? No, that's not mine. That's yours. That's your inventory, you know, and here's how I spell my name, you know. For me, you know, but my, what's mine is looking at that stuff, you know. Did I offend somebody today? Was it intentional? Going through that 10-step and that 4-step, those questions in the big book and being like, wow, you know what? There is a difference between being direct and being brutal. You know, honesty without compassion is brutality. Was I being compassionate in the way that I said this? You know, in the way that I said, you know, this is your fucking part. Was I compassionate or was I disgusting? You know, so keeping those things in mind, and you know. And constantly doing that self-evaluation, you know, that self, those inventories, you know, and keeping up with my prayer and meditation. When I keep up with my prayer and meditation, that's when I have a heightened awareness of my behavior, you know. Because, you know, like, I don't believe that God speaks directly to me, you know. Like, I don't hear God's voice. That would be cool. But I don't. You know, what happens is I pray for something to be removed, and God provides me an opportunity to act as if it's been removed, you know? Or I have something going on, and I call somebody, and I truly believe that God is then using that person as a conduit to talk to me. You know, I believe that when somebody comes to me for whatever, I am the conduit for God, you know? Like, I am God's channel. And so going to the 11th step, that Lord's Prayer, am I being a channel of peace? You know, am I listening with an open mind? Am I listening with a sense of humility that maybe I don't know the right answer? You know, that maybe my plan isn't right and you have something that God is just, it has divinely inspired for you to tell me, you know, like, hey, Alicia, your behavior is disgusting. You know, I don't want what you have. You know, that's like it for me, you know. When I'm doing all of these things, like, I want what I have, you know. I want my sobriety. I want my sobriety intact, and I want to give it away, you know. I mean, and that's not to say that, like, I don't want what you have, you know. Like, I need the fellowship, and I need this whole process. But, like, I really want what I have, you know, to my core. I just want it to get better, and I just want it to improve. And the way that it improves is with God and with you, you know, on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the service of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I get to do these things. You know, I get to be me for all that it looks like and accept that, you know, not have to change me to make you more comfortable. You know, not have to change you to make me more comfortable, you know, to just be okay. You know, that is a beautiful area. That grayness, you know, that, like, nothing is black and white, that there's some flexibility and mobility in the way that we get to live life and the way we get to live life sober. Like, God, is that a freeing concept, you know, and just allowing me to be me, you know. A beautiful, perfectly imperfect child of God. And, you know, I just moved. holy shit. This is the first time I've moved in sobriety. This is the technically third time I've moved in my life. I went to college out of state. That didn't go well. I got kicked out of college, so I came back. You know, my parents got divorced, and I moved to Tucson with my mom. And that whole first year was a fucking shit show, you know, just hammered all the time. And an asshole, you know? So, like, that didn't go well, you know? Eventually, yes, I did get sober, which was, I think, divinely inspired. But now I'm sober, you know, and I've moved to a new place. And because, you know, I'm emotionally sober at this moment, and I'm okay with me, like, I can tell you that, you know, for the first, like, week or two, I really wanted a drink. You know, I'm coming up on 10 years next Saturday, and I really wanted to drink. And I thought this would be easy. You know, I'm not connected here. I don't really know a lot of people here. It would be okay. And that scared me, which is what it's supposed to do, that recoiling from a hot flame, you know? So I jumped in. But the thing about it is like my connection with God has never been stronger. You know, like every day, like, I'm gonna cry, but like, give me a second. you know, my dad and my brother came to Tucson to help me move. We packed up the truck, and I had that moment, you know, like saying goodbye to my mom, because I'm a fucking mama's girl, and driving away and getting on that highway to leave Tucson. And I just felt that it's gonna be okay. This is the right path. Every morning that I have woken up in Austin, Texas, I have felt like this is the right thing. This is like being able to breathe, you know, like taking fresh air every single morning, you know, and going, God, you know, and just feeling so, like, I know this is my path. Like, having that gut intuitive feeling, like, this is where I'm supposed to be. But it's hard. Like, moving is fucking hard. And for the first 2 weeks, I was really numb. And, you know, I think it was, like, last Friday, I was sitting in a meeting, and I burst into tears for the first time, you know, which was like, holy shit. This is really hard. And the hard part is like, you know, I don't have my friends. I don't have my safety net. I don't have my support group. You know, I'm a new person in Alcoholics Anonymous in Austin, Texas. And while, yeah, everybody's been like super sweet and wonderful and inviting and welcoming, like, they're not. You know, like, I'm not a newcomer. I'm not, you know, 24 hours sober clinging to life. I have 10 years, like, the attitude is kind of make your fucking way. You know, you've been doing this 10 years, put your fucking hand out, you know? And that's the struggle, you know? Like, I don't feel connected to the fellowship. I don't feel connected to the meetings that I go to. But that doesn't mean that I don't feel connected to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? Like, I'm doing inventory. I call my sponsor. I'm calling people, you know? Like, I have reached out to people in Austin because, like, people move to Austin, like, every fucking day, you know? Like, so, like, oh, I just moved here. Oh, I just moved here. What's it been like for you? Like, I'm scared. Will you hold my hand while we go talk to this person together and, like, make friends, you know? And then I was talking to this guy, last Friday, and, you know, he had moved to Austin about 2 years ago, and he said something to me that was so profound, you know, like, cause I told him, like, I cried today, you know, it's the first time I cried, and he was like, was it panic? Like, oh God, I've made a horrible decision. And I was like, no, it was, this is really hard. And he said to me, you know, sometimes I can start to feel lonely or start to feel depressed or start to feel like this isn't the same as what I'm used to. The meetings are different. The people are different. The da-da-da-da-da is different. How, you know, the structure is different. Like, I can feel that way and feel like, oh God, I need to move home. You know, if I were at home, I'd be better. I'd be okay. I'd feel comfortable. But when he stops and takes the spiritual step back, the reality is that he can be lonely anywhere. He can feel separate from anywhere. He can feel like this isn't working anywhere. And so just having that, like, oh yeah, like, cause that's a feeling, you know? And I want to cover it up. I want to make it better. I want to make it an excuse for it. And just being with it and reaching out in a new place and going, this is where I'm at. Will you be my friend? You know, like, I'm feeling really lonely. You know, the last thing that, and it just popped into my head, so I'm going to kind of segue back a little bit. The biggest change, I think, in my sobriety over the last couple of years is my ability to respond rather than react, you know? And I think that that's, like, my ability to respond to the situation of moving and going, this is just hard. Like, my response is, this is hard and I need to do something about it. My reaction is not, well, it's hard, I need to go home. It's hard, I need to drink. You know, like, yes, I had the thought, I'm an alcoholic, so fuck it, you know? You know, my response is, this is hard, what's the solution? You know, and that's a really big difference. And I think that's a valid thing is to do that internal, that, you know, evaluation, that inventory of myself and to say, like, I'm responding to life rather than reacting to it. You know, I'm responding to a situation as hard and I'm doing what I need to do. I'm not, you know, drinking. I'm not punching my roommate in the face. I'm not picking fights with him. I'm not picking fights with my mom. You know, I'm not picking fights with anybody. I'm sitting there going, this is really hard, you know, and I need help. And that's, you know, for me, I think that's really the difference, you know, in attaining that spiritual awakening, you know, is my ability to respond to life, not react to it. And, you know, I'm so grateful to be here. I had such a fucking nightmare experience trying to get here. Like, it was so horrible. And at the last minute, they were like, get on the plane! you know, but like my response was, maybe I'm just not fucking meant to go. You know, like maybe it wasn't in the cards. I was disappointed. I was sad about it. I was really fucking worried about it. But I didn't I didn't punch the fucking kiosk lady in the face and run on the plane, you know, like, which could have happened 10 years ago. You know, I just went with it and it all worked out as it usually does, you know, like my life usually just works out the way it's supposed to. I may not like it, but it works out, you know? And so I'm really, really grateful to be here. This has been awesome. And I'm so grateful to see so many of my wonderful friends. And, you know, I don't see you every day, but you're in my hearts every day. And that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
My name is Chelsea, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chelsea.
Hi. How do you finish that? How do you follow up after that? She cried twice. Emotional sobriety, I thought was really funny when they asked me if I wanted to be on this topic, because I at first was afraid and then was excited, because I said, does this mean that you think I have emotional sobriety? Or does this mean that you know that my life's been a shit show? Which one is it, guys? You know, and I think it's a combination of the two. My life has been interesting, you know. When I got sober, I was not told that everything was going to be easy, thank God. My sponsor let me know that this is hard. This is not easy road to take. And when you go down and you decide, you go down this road and you decide to get sober, or, you know, something happens and you start to become sober, it's not always going to be easy. And, you know, she made me write out that list of, like, the things that, like, well, if this was to happen, all my reservations, you know, if this was to happen, then I would get loaded. If this was to happen, I would get loaded. Like, all of these different things. And in the past, since my entire sobriety, I've had like four or five of those things happen. and I haven't gotten loaded. You know, my sobriety date is November 10th of 07, and I've been lucky enough to walk through a lot of pain and not be sober. I mean, not be drunk. I've been able to walk through a lot of pain and stay sober. But it's been rough, you know, and I thank you both for your share, because I really connected with a lot, and you and I are kindred spirits. It's so weird. When I first met her, I was like, I don't know if I like this girl. And then I thought to myself, the reason I don't like her is because we're the exact same person. We're both very abrasive and direct and brass. And my friends know that. And the best part about me today is knowing that that's okay. You know, there is a reason that I have the defects that I have, because they're needed. You know, I've been known to tell somebody who's asked me, like, do you know if I can get involved? And I don't have a service commitment, or I don't have a home group. There's a home group right behind you, bitch. You were just in it. You chose to sit outside and smoke. Like, you're asking for something that is so freely given to you, and you're just turning your back. Like, it just is insane. And it comes back that person, you know, comes back later and is like, oh my God, thank you so much. And it's like, there you go. You got it. But my sponsor at first told me, you know, my sponsor told me from the beginning, because she had to teach me how to speak to people. She had to teach me the right way and the wrong way to say things. Because I used to say a lot of really mean things. Because I was verbally abusive. And it would come down to whenever you are saying something, I would always tell her, but I'm being honest. Like, I'm living an honest program. I'm being honest. And she would always say, yes, that is honest. Is it necessary? And is it needed? And I was like, well, you know. And when she had posed those two questions, she said, before you open your mouth, you need to decide and ask yourself these questions. Is it honest? And I'm like, fuck yeah. Is it necessary? And is it needed? Like, is that really needed? Is it needed for you to tell somebody that they might not be, like, wearing whatever you think is not a good thing for them to wear? It's not needed. And it's not necessary. It's honest in my opinion, but it's not needed and it's not necessary and it's rude. And I didn't know what that was. I really didn't know what those different things were, and I've had to learn a lot in this program. I've had to grow up a lot in this program. I was lucky enough to get sober at 23, and I'm 30 now, and I feel like the program has taught me how to be a woman. You know, I'm engaged today, and I didn't ever think that was going to happen, honestly. I ran through boyfriends quickly, and a lot of times because I didn't really care about other people's feelings, mainly because I only cared about myself, and I used to boss people around a lot. I know it's crazy. people used to let me get away with it, you know, and that's the thing. I found someone today who has stood up to me and said no. And I never thought I'd find that, and it floored me, and I was real pissed off, you know, at first. You, what do you mean, no? Like, we do what I want. I've already made plans. I'm like, no. Okay. And then it ended up working out, and it's really crazy. But what the first thing that's happened, and that in itself has been an experience that must not be missed, but in the beginning, you know, I had gotten sober, and I thought that the worst was over. You know, going through all of that stuff and trying to get sober, because I did not come into this program and get sober right away. I actually came in July of 2007 in an IOP program, and I tried, and the lady who was my sponsor, she kept coming up to me and saying, you know, can you meet me here every Monday? Yeah, fine, whatever, because I wasn't ready to get a sponsor because I didn't think I was that bad. And so I wasn't there yet. And so she had told me, you know, can you just meet me here on Mondays? No problem. So I'd meet her on Mondays, and I would talk to her, and she would tell me, you know, did you stay sober through the weekend? And I'd straight up tell her no, you know, and she was like, that's okay, because you're here. And I continued to do that. I continued to run my life into the ground further than it was before, until I was beaten down to a place of submission where I could no longer go anywhere else. I had nobody that wanted me to live with them. I had no family because my mom literally had to hold the door shut because I had the key and I was pounding on that door and I'm screaming just awful things to her. And she's like, you need help and I'm not letting you in until you get help. And she had said that was the hardest thing she's ever had to do is hold that door shut because I have the key and I would unlock it, you know, and I'm grateful for that, you know, but it was like after going through all that, I was like, okay, that's gotta be the worst of it, you know? And then I come up to 3 years sober and my life's trucking along and I'm like, yeah, things are getting a little better. You know, I got a job and they actually like want me to come back at that job and I don't get fired and I'm not saying inappropriate things and I'm working with children. And they let me, and it was great, and I had a really good time, you know, and it was just amazing. I was like, yes, life is amazing, this is getting so good. And then my father passed away, and he was my best friend, and I still miss him every day. And when he passed away, that was number one on my list. My parents die. And I called my sponsor and I cried and I said, it's not fair. She said, life's not fair, man. I said, okay, I get that. You know, it would make it, I said, you know when my dad wasn't dead? When I was drinking. And she was like, it's not gonna change. You can drink, but it's not gonna change it. I can't bring people back from the dead. And that was hard. I wanted to drink and use every day for a while because the pain was so great. I didn't think I could feel that level of pain, that level of emotional stress. But you know what? People showed up to my house like they all said that they would. I used to hear stories, you know, my first couple years sober, I would hear stories of people showing up and I'm like, that's like some gay church group thing. Like, nobody's going to do that. And then sure enough, you know, people were showing up to my house. And they were bringing food and taking care of me. And the best thing that happened was my best friend Alex would show up for me. And she didn't talk to me. And she didn't ask me questions. And she didn't say, like, you know, do you want to talk about it and whatever. No. She sat there and watched TV with me for weeks. That's all I could do is go to meetings, come back and sit. But she was there, so I wasn't alone. You know, I didn't have to walk through that alone because of this program. The emotional sobriety that I've gotten from this program is beyond anything I ever had out there. And I have to keep remembering that every time things happen, you know, because then we're moving along and a month, not a, a year after that, my grandma dies, which is my dad's mom. So we're like, hey, you know, here we go again, back up to Superior to go, you know, take care of this. And a year after that, my uncle died, which is my dad's brother. So now his whole side of the family is just wiped the fuck out. So now I'm left with, like, just my mom and my sister and now my brand new niece. And that's it for family. I was so upset. You know, after my uncle had died, and that was like the third death in like the next couple years, I was scared to have time go forward. So I was like, who's gonna die? Like, I was just like one of those things where I was like, someone's gonna die at all times. I was always ready for somebody to die. And my mom's like, you can't live life like this. You can't live life scared that somebody's gonna die because they're gonna die. People are gonna die all the time. It's gonna happen. And I had to learn how to dig deep and find that place. I've never had a stronger connection with my higher power than I have during those times because all I could do when it was my dad, after that I had been a little bit more numb to death because once I lost my dad, everything else just seemed so inconsequential. I mean, my grandma, she's old anyway, she's lived her life. But I mean, my uncle, you know, he has my dad's age and so I mean, that's shitty, but it wasn't my dad. You know, and once he passed away, it was really hard. And I had to dig deep. When I was sitting there, I would watch TV. You know, at night, my sponsor would have me pray, and I would scream at God. I was pissed. And I would tell God, this is not fair, and you're an asshole, and I don't like you right now. And she said, that's okay, because you're still talking to something. You know, she said, and I was like, maybe I don't believe in God anymore. And she said, then who are you talking to? And I was like, huh. All right. So, you know, like, it ended up being that connection where I was able to find something within myself to know that, like, it, and she started to show me, and she said it in ways that hurt my feelings at first. You know, she said, I know you loved your dad, but he's gone. Your sobriety is not contingent on him. He's gone. Your sobriety needs to be about you. Like, where are you at? Where with your higher power, you need to find yourself and know that, because if you're doing that, then you're making your father your higher power, and that's not okay. And that floored me because I was pissed. Because I was like, you didn't know him, you know, and all this stuff. And she's like, think about it, though. And, you know, I stormed off and I left and I go home. And, like, you know, later on, I was like, God damn it. She's right. And so, like, I kept thinking about it. And she was right. I really hadn't. I noticed that in those first 3 years, I don't know how I was able to stay sober because I hadn't gotten, like, a super duper strong connection with a higher power. I was relying a lot on the love and that I had gotten from my parents because they were taking care of me and they were the ones that were letting me know every day that it's amazing that I'm sober and they're so happy for me and they're, you know, giving me money if I needed it and like all this stuff. And when he passed, you know, I did kind of make him my higher power for a little while. And when he passed, it was really sad and I had a really hard time with it, you know, and it's finding that to know that as long as I keep, and I kept telling myself, as long as I put one foot in front of the other and keep walking, it can't get any worse. You know, it's just, I have two options. I can sit here and stew in it and get worse and then go drink and then die. Cause for me, to drink is to die. Or I can put one foot in front of the other and get up and get dressed, and even if I'm getting dressed to sit onto the couch where I'm moving out of my bedroom to the living room, I'm moving somewhere, you know, because that was her big thing. You can't lay in bed all day, you know, you got to get up. And so I'm getting up and I'm slowly moving one thing in front of the other, and before I know it, you know, I'm walking through things and it's okay, you know. And it's just the people in this program lifted me up when I needed it, because I didn't think I wanted it and I didn't think I needed it, and I definitely wasn't going to ask for it. Because I'm stubborn and hard-headed, and it only works to my disadvantage, is that I don't want other people's help because I can do it by myself. I've always said, I can do this all by myself. But I can't do it by myself. I need a connection with my higher power, and I need a connection with a fellowship. You know, I needed to be going through my steps and doing my inventory and going through and doing all these things, you know. I have suffered the loss of my father and my uncle and my grandma and my best friend hung herself. So through all of the deaths, it's been a challenge, but I can say that I have continued to put one foot in front of the other, and amazing things have happened to me. I'm not the happiest person every day, like you said, but I can tell you that I'm sober. I've remained sober. And I have sponsees, I have a sponsor, I actually have women that want what I have today, which is rare. And I'm excited. You know, I'm excited to be here. I'm excited about little things a lot more than I used to be. The one thing that makes me more happy than almost anything in this world, which is gonna be sad, but I don't care, is Diet Coke. I'm sorry, but I love it. I do. I get a fresh Diet Coke, and I'm so happy. I'm so grateful for this thing, you know? And it's, like, things like that that make me realize that, like, I'm human, and I need to take pleasure in the small things, because I'm not going to have a lot of money for cars or a lot of stuff, because I'm not rich by any means. I have little things like drinks and things that make me happy, you know? And that's all it takes, just that putting one foot in front of the other and knowing that it can't get worse. Because worse to me would be staying in the same place and then getting loaded. Moving forward is at least something. You're at least doing something. I'm just grateful. I'm grateful for my friends, the people who came out to see me speak. It means a lot to me. And I do believe that my dad is helping to carry me. And that makes me happy too. And I pass.